Good morning, and welcome to Making a Change for Good. Good morning, Ashwini.
Good morning, Bob. Can you hear me?
Perfectly.
Oh, yay.
Let's keep with that. All righty. Our assignment from yesterday. The self-hating message is that as we are not enough. Enough for what? What does that mean? If you were enough, then what? Assignment. What does self-hate say you are missing? RL, what you see. All right, here's our first caller. You're now live on the air. Will you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Ashwini. This is Tom from Phoenix.
Hey, Tom. What are you seeing?
I have a couple of... Well, I see a lot of stuff. The first thing I want to say is thank you. You guys are doing a great job, and I'm just so thrilled to be part of this experience. But I had two things. One, I wanted to ask for some guidance about not recording the voices of self-hate, because I think maybe I've been doing my recordings in a way that's not as helpful as it could be.
Uh-huh.
By recording them saying, hey, this is what self-hate says. So I just don't know. I wanted to call and ask for some guidance on that.
Well, two things about that, Tom. One is we had a very, very interesting call on Open Air this week where that question was asked, and Sherry actually gave a fabulous explanation of it. So it's available. And I'll just say that what you're doing is exactly what we recommend. We don't want self-hate to get the recorder so that you're listening to on the recorder what self-hate is saying to you inside your head, right? You're an idiot. Why did you do that? You shouldn't have something wrong with you, right? That's not what we want to record and listen to. However, it is very helpful to say exactly how you said it with a little bit of modification. The voices of self-hate lie when they say, and what is true is, and you record what is true. That's very helpful to record, because what we're trying to do is replace the self-hating voice in the head with what is true. Long as you preface it with, this is what self-hate is saying, so that it doesn't trigger you into identification, that's fine. Because it's good to know that's what the voice in my head says, but it's not true. That's important.
Okay,
and replace
good.
It with the truth, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's exactly what I think I've been doing that, but I'm going to go through my old recordings and just shore them up and make sure that self-hate isn't controlling any of them. So thank you very much for that.
Yes. There's another nuance to it when you do the two-handed recording, but I'll let you listen to that interaction with Sherry had on Open Air.
And I will do so. And then just one last thing very briefly about beginnings. What I see when faced with any kind of beginning is the statement from ego, well, you're just not good at that, or you're just not good at it.
Uh-huh.
So it's very vague. And then my job, I think, as the human, according to ego, is to fill in the blanks what I'm not good at. And it's very helpful in filling in those blanks. So I was really surprised to see that, how vague it was and how it kind of tricks me into being, into merging with it and becoming, helping ego, talk about all these things I'm terrible at.
Oh, that is so powerful to see that self-hate is an abstraction, right? That's why the question is phrased as it is. It just throws something out there of somehow or the other you're not enough. And the way that it gets you is you're not good at that. It doesn't describe what good is. It doesn't describe what that is. It leaves you to fill it in, right?
Yes.
And cooperate with it to create the reality of not enough for you. But to see it and go, well, what are you saying good is, and what are you saying it is? Here's what I'm good at. And that's a perfect recording for what we're talking about, right? Self-hate says, I'm not good at that. Whereas what is true is, well, I'm good at this, and I'm good at this, and I'm good at this. And, you know, I don't have to be good at it all in order to be a completely fine human being. The only time I'm not fine is when I'm listening to a voice that vaguely says that I'm not good at something and never tells me what it is.
Great. Oh, thank you. And I will record about that. I will do that.
Wonderful, because it's a really powerful insight. Not just the insight, but also the practice of going up against the voice and questioning it and saying, be more specific, please, because otherwise I'm not giving you any attention.
Yes, yes. Excellent. Thank you so much, Ashwini. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Tom. And can you hear me, Ashwini?
Absolutely. Thanks, Bob.
Okay, just want to double check. that what I love about that conversation is that it so much points to conditioning, counting on me not examining what I'm being told, you know, to remain in that unconsciousness. And like what you two were talking about was just so helpful. Like, as soon as we train our awareness on the conversation, what's true, what's not true, it all breaks down pretty quickly.
It does indeed. It's the unexamined. It's counting on us not to be present, and it's training us not to be present. So once we bring that the content of what it says into presence, into awareness, then it has less of an ability to control us. It breaks down very quickly, as you said. Yeah.
Great. All right. Here's our next caller. You're now live on the air. Will you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Paula here.
Hey, Paula.
Hey. Of course, the first thing I want to say is thank you, because this is so amazingly helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And, so thank you all, everyone, being involved and offering all these Sangha opportunities is just so meaningful all the time, even in times of great stress.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, thank you.
Yeah. And, you know, what I'm really loving about this session focus is new beginnings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, all that's going on globally is such a powerful opportunity to look around and see and weigh all the ways in which that there are new beginnings happening around us all the time. And now it's such a global experience that it creates this amazing sense of opportunity and connection.
Uh-huh. Yes, it does. It does indeed. And so how are you seeing that for you, Paula?
Well, the biggest way I'm seeing it is that a few weeks ago, maybe just 2 or 3 weeks ago, I really had a rush of ego trying to tap down practice.
Uh-huh.
You're doing too much of it. You're over-involved. It doesn't give you time to do anything else. It's your whole life.
Yeah. It's your whole life.
It's your whole life.
That's the way. It's not enough, right? Because you don't have enough time to do other things if you're so engaged in doing so much practice.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And it was also pointing out ways in which it sees that I'm not getting what I want.
How interesting. Yes. So just because you're engaged, and that's the excuse, right, that you can't focus the attention on what you want because you're so busy doing practice.
I'm sorry. It's just so funny in the moment.
Yes, it is, isn't it? It's so absurd because if you just took 1 second and examined that, as Bob was pointing to, I want to do practice. This is what I want more than anything else. What you don't want is for me to be doing practice. I get that. That's not your heart's desire, right?
No, it isn't. Yeah. I do want to be. I want it to be my whole life, because why not? Why not? It is what brings me to consciousness. It's what wakes me up. It's what I've longed for. It's what my heart desires. It's all of that. And, of course, what ego would like to do is to separate practice out from everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Well, and we can see it for what it is, right, Paula, that if we don't believe the content of what it's saying, you can see that it attempts to create dissatisfaction. The way you're doing this is not how it needs to be done. Somehow or the other, something is missing. And that separation that you're pointing at, which is, well, this is practice and this is what you want. And they're two separate things. And if we aren't paying attention, we actually believe that's the case. Rather than saying, wait a minute, my life is going the way I want it to go, and where the attention is where I want it to be, which is on practice, and everything in my life is in that container, and I'm quite happy, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for reflecting that in that way, because it makes it so clear that this is the path, this is the what we call at least when I grew up, the straight and narrow path. That, you know, there's always these little side paths that we can choose to go down that take us always to a place of suffering. And so to come back in this most beautiful present moment path, mm-hmm. where everything that we see around us has something to offer. Mm-hmm. And it's a heavy gardening time here in South Carolina. And it's like, oh gosh, yeah, everything's exploding, saying, here I am, I'm a new beginning.
Yes, yes. Well, and when we realize that, right, Paula, I think that's really what you're pointing to, is there's a way in which we've been down all those paths, and over again, our experience is not that. Not that. Yes, everything is a learning opportunity, but what I've learned is I know the how of how I want to live my life, and even if I go down that path, there's nothing wrong with it. It's an opportunity to once again come back to this is what I choose. Right? And if you can avoid going down that path because you see that the only thing that's leading you up this garden path is ego, then you don't have to go down that. You can recognize it and go, it's a waste of time. I'm just going to come here and sit with this beautiful flower that is the beginning of something new.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's very, very, very beautiful and well stated. Thank you, Ashwini. I think I will say goodbye for now.
Thank you, Paula.
Thank
you. Happy gardening.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Paula. I'm going to go ahead and bring the next caller on, Ashwini.
Thanks, Bob.
Here is our next caller. You're now live on the air. Will you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Ashwini. Hi, Bob. It's Ramita in Charleston, another Charlestonian.
Hi, Ramita.
Hello. Happy to be here. And with this assignment, what I'm looking at is that conditioning wants to convince me that I cannot survive without its guidance.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. there's not enough intelligence. You don't know enough to make the right decisions for yourself or anyone else. And basically talking me into sticking with the tried and true, quote unquote, advice of egocentric karma conditioning.
Yes, yes. That it's what we're conditioned to believe, that we have to, that the intelligence of the universe is insufficient to be able to deal with the universe, that with life,
mm-hmm.
and that I have to leave that in order to go to that conditioned system in order to be able to be safe or protected. And I love the way you stated it. For you, there's not enough intelligence not to go with the tried and true. That's what's not enough. That's what's missing. And so, you know, be me, come to me, let me tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you are an expression of the intelligence that animates and has access to that intelligence, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you're not listening to ego. Yeah.
Right, right. So that when the you know, the stories get going, the fear stories, the anxiety sensations, or all of those things that get labeled fear and anxiety, conditioning gets to the point, the voices start saying things like, I can't take this anymore, you have to go unconscious, you have to do something else to distract yourself. You're not adequate to being present here with whatever's going on. Mm-hmm.
And you do see that, right?
That
it's that all the pronouns, if we go from I and you to it, it's describing itself. And therefore, that's such a wonderful way by which we disidentify from what we're not and stay with being here where all of the information and information that we ever need is available to us. And mm-hmm. we can practice receiving it, right? Because if we've turned our receptors to ego for a while, sometimes we can't hear the sound of the bird and go, the moment is telling me to be in absolute wonder at melody, right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So it's so helpful to remember, you know, it's lying and the exact opposite is what's true. So being here is the balm for the soul, the antidote, the cure. Yes. If you want to say, yes. to whatever's going on. And there's no problem here at all, and I am adequate. This human being, this authentic expression of nature, when present and receptive, is not only sufficient, but all there is.
Mm-hmm. And that's that wonderful recording, right? Self-hate lies when it says that the intelligence is insufficient, what my experience is, and then you can describe your experience, right? When you are here, you don't feel anxiety. That anxiety and fear is also part of the conditioned process. When you're here, you can hear that. I mean, I can hear the sound of the birds in the background for you and the dog barking. And just being present to that is such a joyful place. There is mm-hmm. no fear when you're listening to the birds.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So very grateful for practice and for... being able to be connected this way. So
mm-hmm. yeah.
thank you so much. And listening to these recordings, these radio shows, is disidentifying. The more I listen, the more and more present I am as I hear Sangha describing their experience and all of us practicing together to turn attention away from all of that nonsense, all of those lies, and listen to the birds.
Exactly, and we say this a lot, right, that the reason these shows are in open air, listening to that, it's a redirect of attention. We're not listening to the conversation in conditioned mind, and we're listening to what is true for people, authenticity speaking, and therefore it takes us to that place.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Be well.
You too.
Thanks, Ramita. I just love that conversation and just listening. I could just listen to the birds the whole time.
Because
it really gets to that place of, like, you know, for the bird, you know, the bird isn't. Oops, I think someone is unmuted. Hold on a second. Not sure where that sound is coming from, but. Anyway, I think what I was going to say is that the bird doesn't ask, am I enough? you know, and actually the authentic human being doesn't either. You know, it's only conditioning wanting me to be in that conversation.
Exactly.
All right, I'm going to bring on the next caller. Next caller, you're now live on the air. Will you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Catherine from St. Louis.
Hey, Catherine.
I need to okay anything before you buy.
So there's some other noise. But if people are not muted, can you please mute yourself? Go ahead, Catherine.
If I were enough, I wouldn't suffer. With what I saw.
Ooh. Oh, my God. Go ahead.
And what's missing is strength. I don't have this. I'm not strong enough. So I've been feeling a lot of despair, and that's not uncommon for me. And the message is, if I were just stronger, what's happening in the world wouldn't bother me so much, and you know, I wouldn't be suffering.
Right. Yes. So it's your fault that you have an ego, and sorry, Catherine, hang on one second. Bob, is there anything we can do about that background noise? So Catherine, have you seen the lie that is?
No, I haven't. Tell me what it is, please.
Well, it is a lie, right? I mean, the Buddha said there is suffering. Everybody suffers. And it's possible to end suffering. And we recite it every morning, right? We're here to pay attention. We're not here to create and cling to beliefs. So that when we hear a voice in the head that says that that you're not strong enough not to suffer, then you look at it and go, well, how is that true? Isn't it a belief? Right? So our job is to look at it and go, what is self-hate saying that is, it's self-hate. Nothing it says is true. And redirect the attention to not suffering by not listening to that conversation.
Well, the despair is still there, though.
Well, so when the despair is there, what do?
I cry a lot.
Do you pick up the recorder and talk about it?
I do. There has not been a response.
Uh-huh.
I record, and then I put it in the left hand, and I breathe for a little bit, and then I listen, and there's nothing offered.
Uh-huh. And do you have a way of recording in the right hand that allows you to get clear about what it is that the person is hearing that puts them in that place?
Well,
hearing and believing, right?
Huh? I'm sorry?
Hearing and believing.
Right. Yeah, hearing what the person is hearing and believing.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So since we could process this a lot, right, Catherine, perhaps the takeaway for you, that the practice for you could be just to pay really close attention to things, right? We have in our practice established for ourselves that nothing that ego says is true. All it's saying is to keep us in that suffering place. And so our practice is to be able to hear what it's saying, see what it's saying, look at the beliefs and assumptions, and assist the human being that's being tortured by that, right? And so to take as given that what self-hate says is a lie, and to see how that process of despair is being caused so that you could transcend it. The focus of the attention isn't on disproving what conditioned mind is saying, but the focus of the attention is to look at disidentifying from what the voice is saying in order for us to be able to see what is true and what is so. Not to feel good necessarily, not for a particular experience or outcome, but for us to accomplish that process of disidentification. Not to stay within it.
I'm wondering if writing it out would help, because recording does not seem to be at this point.
Well, I would never say not to record about it, but one of the things you could do is the exercise that we often do around recording and listening, which is to write down what the negative messages are, right?
Right.
So that we could clearly say we don't want to ever record the negative messages, but we do want to be able to know what the voices are saying.
Yeah.
And it sounds like when you're in the right hand, the practice might be
to come from that place of not
despair.
Just despair, but what is it that that person is being told? Can you access that and just see if it is a different experience? But let's start with writing out those negative messages.
Okay, I'll try that. That sounds good.
Okay. All right.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Catherine. Catherine, and I'm going to try and get one more caller on here, Ashwini. Next caller, you're now live on the air. Will you please introduce yourself? Whoops. Next caller.
Hi, good morning. It's Todd. Hi, Bob. Hi, Ashwini.
Hi, Todd.
Hi. So I'm not sure how I can tie this in, but it just dropped in, it seems. And it reminds me of a conversation Sherry had with a Sangha member from last year's show, is that for the majority of conditioned humans, we seem to place the highest value on life and preserving our own lives, yet we don't seem to value the life of non-human species or other living entities, and it seems to that has something to do with that conditioned view of enough.
Todd, that is such an important point. It's just something I've really been looking at, that what you're saying is, there's such a level of hubris to think
right.
that we're the species that need to be saved, and we can do whatever we want to, whatever is out there, and we don't have to take the consequences of it. And you're right, it does come from that feeling of not enough, because then it's about me. It's about me, because I'm trying to fill this gaping hole of not enough that I can afford not to think about or care about or be present to the value of anything else. And that comes from that non-separation. I think that's what you're pointing us to. That if I am separate from everything, then there's that sense of me versus them. But if everything was me, we would never cut down a tree.
Yeah. Yeah, we'd never cut down a tree. We'd never eat a creature.
Yes. We would never harm. If we are so focused on self-preservation, then if everything is the self, we would preserve it all.
Yeah. You know, in the context of this recent global pandemic and the coronavirus and how so many things are dropping in of, you know, maybe nature's way of, you know, Darwin's theory, natural selection, and it seems to be attacking the weakest, and maybe nature's way of thinning the herd. But I see that the way they shut down the whole planet is the preservation of we have to, you know, we can't allow humans to die. Yet there's so much, you know, external destruction all the time that humans don't even recognize and wouldn't even correct.
Yes, and what we're looking at, right, Todd, is that when we shut down, everything else flourishes.
I missed that. Could you repeat that?
Well, that, you know, that if we're not flying planes and driving cars and, you know, there's a chance for everything, and there's a chance for everything else not to be destroyed by our unconsciousness.
Well, you know, there's a lot of researchers and scientific evidence coming out that people study these things, you know, air pollution and, you know, carbon footprints and, you know, ocean temperatures and that. And they're saying with this kind of halting of most of, you know, humans' activities, that this is a blueprint for how we're going to stop global warming. We're going to reduce human activity to a point where, you know, we just cannot proceed with our current ways. And I believe our current ways is because not enough. You know, it's humans are seeking better accommodations and better ideas. You know, faster cars, bigger houses, you know, just the amount of resources required to feed ego is just so, in my experience, so destructive on so many levels to so many areas of life.
Well, it's such a deeply spiritual place that you're pointing to, right, Todd? Because it is greed that when there is a level of I need to seek my well-being, And I'm not resting in what is my well-being, which is being here, right? That that what I want, happiness, peace, love, security, is only available from within. But the entire focus is that it's somehow something I need to acquire. And so we go about acquiring things. Some absence, some wanting in me creates the desire that you're pointing to, that not enough is driving that. And there's such a conditioned belief that it's all available outside at any cost, at any cost.
Right.
I have to be filled. And the entire thing is a lie.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're not going to get it out there. And then we destroy the out there in order to get it, because we make that choice from a place of ego and not a place of satisfaction or being here or present.
Yeah. Yeah, that, as you're saying that, it reminds me of Sherry saying, and there's such clear evidence of looking at dissatisfied and unhappy billionaires. They're acquiring more things, which just clearly shows, it doesn't matter how much wealth or how much, material goods you have. It's that conditioned system that's always going to, if you don't disidentify, which our practice is, encouraging us to do, and that's all we're doing is practicing getting out of that, like the previous caller, that conversation that causes us to look at scarcity, lack, deprivation. It doesn't matter what you've got externally, internally you'll just be the same condition process will just keep causing you to suffer.
That hungry ghost. And the process is of suffering is feeding the hungry ghost, because it's never going to be fulfilled, right? It is that process of deprivation and dissatisfaction.
Well, anyway, Deep Gasho, too. Those folks getting this technology working, and so we have this daily. For me, it's been a huge lifeline. I look forward to it every morning. I look forward to recording the assignments and working throughout the day with them. And through all the stuff externally, internally, it's caused me to have a lot more well-being during this time.
It proves that's where it is, right, Todd? If you can't go acquire it, it gives us the opportunity to discover where it really is.
What a great point. What a great point. Yeah, I'm sheltered in place, ordered to stay home, meditating more, recording more. We're allowed to go out into nature. I've got a park next door. So in like the previous call was saying about spring, it never got the memo or the email that the world shut down. Spring is just, abundance everywhere. Exploding with colors and sights and sounds, and birds are migrating back, and insects are coming back out, and it's really a beautiful thing to see. Nature doesn't really abide by humans' rules and regulations.
Exactly. All right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Deep Gasho. Thanks, Ashwini. Thank you, Bob. Take care.
Thanks, Todd. And that brings us to the end of the show, Ashwini. And here is our assignment for today. Self-hate negates what we are by focusing the attention on what we're not. I am talked into identifying with what's wrong with me. I am told that I have to meet the standards that fix or change me, that make me better, the way I should be to be acceptable and lovable. Yet meeting those standards doesn't get me the approval or acceptance or love that I have assumed I will receive if I meet the standards. This whole orientation misses the point. What we are being conned into believing is that our inherent goodness is conditional, that authentic nature is dependent upon performance. So, attention is taken away from the perfection of authentic nature and turned to an ego-maintaining, dualistic conversation that causes us to believe our acceptance is conditional. Assignment: make a recording that allows you to be in touch with the perfection of the true nature that is you. Listen to this recording as a way of training to stay with the realization of true nature rather than falling for the negation of the self-hating conversation.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Ashwini. Thanks, everybody.
That addresses a whole bunch of conversations that we've had this morning.
Certainly does. All right.
Thank
you. Go happy.
Go happy.